Welcome to ATS Mix.
And I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
And welcome one and all. It is the new and improved ATS Mix. And I am Johnny Anonymous.
And I'm his partner, Dave Rabbit.
Yes. And
yes.
Yes. And we've got a great show planned for everybody. Yes, we do. I almost felt like doing a little Yoda. No. Good show we have. Yes, we do. Yeah. I don't do a good Yoda. On the show.
Yoda sucks, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. On the show, we have a sound off where some of our members chimed in to let us know who they're going to be voting for President of the United States.
And we're also going to be talking to CEO of AboveTopSecret.com, the skeptic overlord himself, better known as Bill Irvin. And he's going to be sharing some of the more popular threads being responded to right now on ATS. And we're also going to ask him some of the member questions in a segment we lovingly call Ask the Overlord.
Love that segment.
I do.
We've
too.
Also got our international ATS Mix correspondents from all around the world that are going to be piping in and telling us what some of the more unique UFO sightings are.
And our special VIP guest interview is with Stan Deo, who has worked on top secret anti-gravity projects as early as the 1970s.
And I bet back there in the 70s, you weren't really thinking about anti-gravity projects, were you?
Nah, banging beaver.
That reminds me that we've got a segment called Dave's Rant that we'll be getting to a little later on. That and so much more coming up right after this brief break.
It's the same dream night after night. I hear this beating, this rhythm. I'm wandering like an unfulfilled lost soul through this misty haze. But I keep following the sound. It seems like I walk forever. In the distance I see something beautiful, magnificent. It seems so far away, yet so near that I can reach out and touch it. As I approach closer, I can see millions of people. All ages, races, religions, philosophies. People from around the world and from every nation on terrestrial Earth. They're moving in mass towards something mystical, magical, magnetic. As I follow them, all of a sudden they begin to create a path for me to walk through. I can see something massive on the horizon. As I get closer, I see a banner unfurling in the gentle wind. It says, "Welcome to the revolution." The crowd begins cheering and celebrating. I'm so overwhelmed by the experience that I wake, still hearing the beating of the heart. And then my dream becomes crystal clear. I have found my holy grail. My thirst is quenched. My lifelong quest finally achieved. I have found AboveTopSecret.com. And my beating heart joins theirs. I have become a member. Welcome to our revolution. AboveTopSecret.com.
ATS Mix. Go.
Go. Go.
Now, from the AboveTopSecret.com mobile headquarters team, currently doing donuts in the Area 51 parking lot, it's the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous.
Well, right about now, I think it might be kind of fun for us to look at some of the UFO sightings from around the world. I know that you're kind of interested in some of the UFO sightings. Aren't you kind of in a hotbed there in Texas?
Yeah, Stephenville, Texas, which is about 2 hours from Dallas, down in Erath County, has had just an abundance, worldwide recognition. People, journalists, people that are in ufology or whatever have gone down to Stephenville because of all the sightings. And, of course, it's the typical military cover-up, you know, First, nobody says that there's any military planes anywhere around. Then all of a sudden, the military is saying there's all these planes going over there, and now they're saying they're not. And it's just a bunch of BS. John, what I want you to do is maybe come down here sometime. Let's run down there and go down to Mini-Me's Bikini Wax Salon and maybe get an autograph or something.
Well, I would rather drive down there than run down there, if you don't mind.
Well, we can do that, you know, if you want.
But I would like to go there because it is a hotbed right now, and I actually have a couple of other ufologist friends and associates that live in Texas that I could visit that would be on
the
way.
Well, good.
It'd be fun. Since we're talking about UFO sightings, we have a number of international correspondents reporting for the ATS Mix. And just to be diplomatic and because I love you as a partner, I'm going to let you choose between the three correspondents to do their reporting. So you have a choice between Canada, USA, and Europe. Which one would you like to listen to first?
Let's listen to Canada. I love the Canadians.
Okay.
Canucks. Yeah, let's get the Canuck up here.
This is ATS Mix.
What? Whoa, what am I hearing?
What is this?
From above topsecret.com.
Oh, crap!
Here are your anomalous sightings
from around the world.
This is Barb Campbell reporting from SPPRC.com. On February 16th, between 7 and 7:30 p.m., Frank and his wife observed over 100 amber-colored lights flying north over the village of Lumsden Beach, Saskatchewan. The formation flew side by side in pairs with one single amber light tagging along on its own in behind. The objects were observed for 3 to 4 minutes before they disappeared beyond the range of sight. The lights remained constant, never changed appearance or intensity, and no sounds could be heard. Although minor meteor activity was present that weekend, Frank says he's seen many meteor showers to know that what he and his wife saw was no meteor shower, and if those were military jets, there would have been sound. Approximately an hour later, northwest of Lumsden Beach and 60 kilometers east of the city of Saskatoon in the town of Colonsay, a woman was seated in her chair crocheting when suddenly her walls started to bang. She said it was like birds were hitting a window. The hockey game on her TV vanished, and in its place, a steady stream of letters and symbols with no spaces began scrolling across the middle of the screen, and then it disappeared, followed by another set of letters and symbols on the lower portion of the screen, back and forth as if replying to one another. After 3 to 4 minutes, it stopped. A resident of the area since 1951, the woman says she has never experienced anything like it before.
This is Victor Camacho from Desvelado.com with this week's sightings report from Mexico. Two important sightings we report this week in Mexico. First, Saturday, March 1st, three flying objects were seen over the Maya archaeological site in Tulum, Mexico. These three objects were hovering for about 20 minutes. 20 persons that were visiting at this time the pyramids. They mentioned that after 20 minutes, the objects moved to the clouds and disappeared. Jorge Chuck Manzanero was able to film the sighting, and the video has been sent to OMIFO, Mexican UFO Research Organization, to be analyzed. Another sighting, this one occurred Sunday, March 2nd. Two bright objects were seen flying over downtown Mexico City. Those objects stayed static for about 10 minutes before disappearing. Some of the witnesses mentioned that the first object has a S shape and reflect a bright white color. After 5 minutes, another object appeared under a clean sky. This one has a black color and a long shape. Some of the witnesses start shooting some pictures. Right now, Mexican UFO Research Organization collecting some of these pictures to be analyzed. Reporting for AboutTopSecret.com, this is Victor Camacho.
These are the reported sightings over the United States. This is David C. In Arizona, jets were spotted following unknown objects. On February 26, 2008, an unusually high number of lights in the sky, too numerous and too concentrated to be aircraft, were spotted along with at least three jets. The UFO lights were brilliant white with a blue hue to them. 3 to 4 flares to the east of these lights were also seen. Viewers stated that the UFO lights jumped, then formed a perfect circle and blinked their lights at the same time. There were at least 15 to 20 lights in the circle. The sighting continued on and off for about 2 hours. Texas, a sheriff and constable were responding to an alarm at a local restaurant on February 2nd when they saw something unusual in the sky. The officers observed the object on the dash cam in the patrol car and could clearly see it by using the camera's zoom feature. The sheriff stated, "To your naked eye, it looked like a bright light. The object had a transparent or translucent appearance with a vapor around it. It was a white glow moving very slowly in the sky. Then it changed from white to green to blue and red lights. It looked almost like a strobe." Another law enforcement agency in Texas heard about the sighting and called to say that they had seen this large object traveling at a very low rate of speed, approximately 300 to 400 feet up in the air the same night. They thought it to be approximately 2 to 3 football fields long and looked something like a cigar with the ends both rounded off. He said he compared it to a wing of a 747. This is David C., reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
Reporting sightings from around Europe, this is Sam Willey of AlienationSam.com. This week, a wave of sightings over Grantham, England. The weekend, beginning Saturday, February 9th, 2008, sparked reports of bizarre astronomical sights in the skies over Grantham, England. A report recently published in the Grantham Journal newspaper states nobody is sure what to make of the strange occurrences, as witnesses report an object, which was described as a spacecraft, pass over the town at 7:45 p.m, leaving a blazing orange trail. The following night, between 9 p.m. and 9:30 p.m, more activity was reported. Shelley Jones, who was walking home at the time, witnessed 5 large fireballs fly from north to south, all on the same trajectory, at 4 to 5 minutes intervals, each being larger and brighter than the one before it. Another witness, Sue Watson, came forward, stating that on Sunday, February 10th, she also saw strange activity at 9:30 p.m. As she arrived home with a number of family members, they all noticed 3 orange objects heading in a northwesterly direction. The lights were flashing on and off, and as the objects came overhead, one of them faded away. And Miss Watson swiftly photographed one of the objects. The photograph, if it's of low quality, however, does distinctly show an orange-like object perfectly circular in shape. Dozens of other witnesses have come forward reporting similar incidents over the same time period. However, there is discussion that some of the events may have been caused by Thai fire lanterns. The Grantham Journal is continuing to probe the strange events. This is Sam Willey reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
We'll be back with more ATS Mix right after this brief message.
Mr. Speaker! Just kidding. But if you're tired of hearing all that robotic mainstream media crap that keeps churning out on the major networks, then give a listen to the Above Politics show with Martin Bain from the United Kingdom and Justin Case from the United States. They bring you political news and views from around the world. AbovePolitics.com. Deny apathy.
And on Friday, I stood up and said, I don't appreciate the speculation about Don Rumsfeld. He's doing a fine job. I strongly support him.
Well, what do you say to critics who believe that you're ignoring the advice of retired generals, military commanders, who say that there needs to be a change?
Corporation profits, bloody oil money. I'm above the law and I'll decide what's right or wrong. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider. Cuckoo, ca-choo, Baghdad City. Policemen sitting pretty little targets in a row. See how they die when shrapnel flies. See mothers cry. I'm lying. I'm lying. I'm lying. I'm lying. Yeah, let's get uranium. Imaginary WMDs. They classify and fax, expose and secret agents, tax control the wealthy, leave another poor behind. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider. Cuckoo, ca-choo.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead.
I'm the commander. I'm the decider. Goo goo choo goo goo.
We got different reputations. It's the that's how I listen to all voices. Mine's the final decision. And Don Rumsfeld is doing a fine job. He's not only transforming the military, he's fighting a war on terror. He's helping us fight a war on terror. I have strong confidence in Don Rumsfeld. I hear the voices.
Hi everybody, Dave Rabbit here. January 1st, 1971, I launched a little pirate radio show called Radio First Termer, broadcasting nightly for 21 days from a secret room in a downtown Saigon, Vietnam brothel. We brought uncensored hard acid rock music, comedy, and news to the troops that were fighting and dying in the rice paddies of Southeast Asia. When I came out of the rabbit hole on February 9th, 2006, I looked far and wide for a place that Radio First Termer and Dave Rabbit could call home for a podcast site, and I found it at podomatic.com. With literally thousands of podcasters from every corner of the globe, there are podcasts there to fit everyone's taste. Podomatic.com is where the action is. So come to where I have planted my flag as the official podcast home for Dave Rabbit and Radio First Termer. Podomatic.com.
ATS Mix.
Yeah, listen up.
From above, top secret.
Jesus Christ.
.com.
Because we've got a great show with the CEO of AboveTopSecret.com, our boss, Bill Irwin, in his weekly show on the thread topics. And just for the members' edification, they're all going, you know, what's all of a sudden? I'm getting you to use. What's all of a sudden with these little promos and commercials? Well, Johnny and I are practicing for hopefully bigger and better days when we have to do commercial breaks. And, you know, Johnny and I have kind of, in our own little creative way, have kind of created some kind of fun things that we hope, you know, that you'll enjoy to promote our sister sites, AbovePolitics.com, and our sister site, BelowTopSecret.com. So that's the reason for the thing. We're just trying to kind of get ourselves in a groove to where, you know, if the magic wand comes down and Johnny's and not my number are called, then, you know, we'll be ready to rock and roll. So that's the reason for that.
So should we keep the public waiting any longer, including ourselves, or should we perhaps give Bill a call now?
Let's let him wait.
All right.
And now it's time for a different view. This is the Skeptic Overview.
It is, of course, the Skeptic Overview. That must mean that I'm Johnny Anonymous.
And I would be his partner, Dave Rabbit.
And along with us, of course, we have Bill Irwin, who is the Skeptic Overlord. This is his show, the Skeptic Overview. Whatever he wants to do on this show, he can do. He's the damn boss.
That's the way it is. Hey, boss, what's happening?
Oh, so I can finally say something now?
Yeah, now yes. That Johnny's got through talking the intro. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, all right, here's the boss here. Bill Irwin.
You're never going to let me live that down, are you?
I mean, have to do a disclaimer.
A thousand apologies.
We'll just take it out of your paycheck.
Oh, I'd love that.
So we're going to try to do a faster pace overview, maybe hopefully 5 threads in 20 minutes, especially if Dave doesn't jump in. And we can get through those and cover 5 of the hottest threads that are happening on ATS in the previous week. And this first thread was posted by member Incarnated and is titled 2012 Without a Doubt. And it was posted on the 25th of February, has 548 replies in 31 pages now and still going. And for you guys and any listeners, and especially Springer, 2012 is a number of importance. It's sort of the Y2K of the conspiracy and paranormal crowd, because that's when the Mayan calendar just stops and doesn't go any further after that. So there's lots of speculation as to why. And Incarnated opens the thread with this. If you're still unsure about 2012, or you've come to debunk 2012, this isn't the thread for you. However, if you're aware and in full acceptance of the world change about to take place and would like to talk about it, this is the thread for you. People, upon realizing the reality of 2012, often get fearful. They want to run, but there's no place to run. So they start lying to themselves and think if they can convince others it isn't going to happen, that somehow makes it real, it's not going to happen. But it's happening. And the thread goes on. It's actually obviously clearly a long thread. A great contribution from ATS member Muse801, where he jumps in going, 2012 is the beginning of the astrological chart of Aquarius. I'm far from being an astrologist. Astrologist.
Astrologist.
Boy, he spelled it wrong, and that's why, okay. Just reading here, and I'm far from being a... But our early folks...
dentures back in, will you?
Right.
Ow.
Before Sumeria, hey.
I'm sorry. That was for the Irwin comment.
Ooh. Oh, sure. Well, that had a basis. Let's see what happens to you in 2012, huh?
That's right.
I'm far from being an astrologist, but our early folks before Sumeria had time to watch and record, and they liked to calculate when the sun came up and the floods receded because they got to live and eat. Looks like a lot of sun worshiping. Most of all, ancient symbology has the same stories, rituals, and artistic themes. And he does a great job in his post of connecting this with cultures throughout the world, where it turns out that 2012 is indeed a number that resonates across a number of cultures as far as the year when everything ends. Have you guys had any thoughts on this thread before we move on to the next?
Go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to say that I've heard about the 2012 deal and the Mayan calendar and all that. In a number of our interviews that Dave and I have done with guests that we've interviewed in the past, about 90% of them just seem to think that it's just another date. If it is anything more, it possibly might be that there might be some form of reawakening spiritually with the world over.
And the theories I've heard simply indicate that the Mayan calendar recycles at 2012 and starts back at the beginning.
Another thing we heard was that, in fact, I think it was Dave that brought this to mind after he asked the guest. And the guest said, well, in my opinion, I think they just ran out of stone while they were typing the calendar
or got bored with it, you know.
Like Fred Flintstone chipping away. And,
that's right. It ends at 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, he says, 2012, this is where I'm stopping, you know, and he goes on and he starts, you know, living his life or whatever. I don't know. All right. What else you got?
Well, the next thread is rather disturbing, and it sparked an interesting debate on a number of avenues. Posted by Silence Is All, new Abu Ghraib images, warning, very disturbing. Indeed, they are.
Yeah.
Posted on February 28th, over 300 replies. And it began with a story on the Wired News website. And psychologist Philip Zimbardo has seen good people turn evil, and he thinks he knows why. Zimbardo will speak Thursday afternoon at the TED conference, where he plans to illustrate his points by showing a 3-minute video obtained by Wired.com that features many previously unseen photographs from the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. And I saw the video, and oh my God. It's just it is horrific. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I saw it too.
It's just terrible. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe that people resorted to this level of just outright cruel torture for no good reason other than to take a cool picture. Is what it seemed to be in some of these.
Yeah. And there was no. I don't think there was any legitimate trying to get information out of them to this thing at all. I mean, it's like a college prank is what it looked like to me.
Exactly.
You know?
The part I thought was very interesting was a little later on in this thread post was where they talked about that they simulated the conditions at Stanford in a role play.
Right.
You were gonna go there, weren't you?
No, I wasn't.
Damn you, Johnny.
Oh, okay. Well,
no,
they did this role play at Stanford that involved, I believe, the Zimbardo guy. And in that process, they found out that they themselves were changing into more of a evil type person, even though it was a simulation. They actually started acting just like what was happening in real life.
Exactly. And that segues nicely to a great post from member New World Over in this thread, where he comments, demonic and inhuman, absolutely. But consider how many people are easily manipulated into becoming inhumane creatures. Too many to count. We live in an age where the mental fortitude and moral foundation of the average citizen is all but extinguished. These are people who commit atrocities. And the people who argue for the existence of detainment camps, et cetera, are saying they're only hurting terrorists, they're only insurgents, they're all guilty. And he goes on to make, you know, several points from that statement that mirrors what you're talking about in the Stanford experiment, that it happens. It can happen to the best of us. And I would really like to hear see if our members can follow up from the presentation of the psychologist and see what conclusions come out of his studies, because it's fascinating to see what happens in situations like this. And it probably has been happening for much longer than we are forever. And it just because of the internet and digital cameras, we're now finding out about it.
Well, boys, I want to remind you of a very historical scenario, the My Lai massacre.
I knew you would.
And there's also just a buttload of instances where troopers would see their friends be killed by little kids or women or whatever, and that kind of created an insightful mentality of the Vietnamese soldier and the American soldier that was in Vietnam. War can create monsters from people who would normally not be in that mentality.
Exactly. And how it's just the, and also what comes of that is the almost the feeding frenzy of the mob mentality.
Exactly.
And reacting to it. And it's almost impossible for many people to just pull themselves out of it, because there's just this mass emotion of revenge that just drives this. And it takes you beyond the point of no return. Well, moving on, keeping things on a lighter note, we're going to go to 9/11.
I love it.
And a thread titled by Atari. We actually have two threads of him, authored by him this week. How many of you believe 9/11 was an inside job? It has 183 replies, again posted on February 25th. He opens with, "There is no doubt in my mind that it was carried out by the ruling elite, the international banking cartels, multinational corporations, military-industrial complex, and more, were very much behind the attack. All a move to coerce the entire society into accepting a world government and totalitarian state." And he goes on to explain further his point. And this has been literally a common topic on ATS since September 12th, 2001. Member Anuk jumps in. That's A-N-O-K. I hope that's how he anticipates we would pronounce his name.
We hope.
And if not, we apologize.
That's right.
Yeah.
He jumps in with a great point. They, being the nefarious they that we conspiracy theorists always allude to, control society through people's emotions. A media report on national TV can change the emotion of the whole country from fear to joy and back again in minutes. They create enemies, real and false, that we need protecting from. They create the situations that justify their existence. Without enemies to fight and property to protect, the government and its military and police become unnecessary. They can't let that happen, so they control society to keep it constantly in fear of some boogeyman, be it druggies, criminals, commies, or Muslims. A bit of research and a good understanding of history, and you will see the patterns of this activity. And he continues on in that vein, and really very much correct, where he's sort of taking a pattern of mob and what we could call society manipulation and applying it to how we're seeing this happen in the 9/11 conspiracies, where, yes, all of these emotions and all of the follow-up attacks and the fear we hear in the political speeches. And if you remember the election of 2004 and the Republican National Convention, I think somebody counted the word terrorism appeared in the speeches like 980 times from the six different keynote speeches. It was just crazy, the amount of fear that's being generated, and it does apply. And an excellent thread to update yourself on what some of the members are thinking about 9/11 as a so-called inside job. The next, jumping right along, is another interesting thread that could have gone bad easily, but didn't turn out too bad. It's, again, posted by Atari. And it's titled, "Israeli Minister Warns of Palestinian Holocaust." Posted on the 29th of February, 182 replies. And it,
wow.
What I'm going to read is the Guardian news article that he launched the thread with. "An Israeli minister today warned of increasingly bitter conflict in the Gaza Strip, saying the Palestinians could bring on themselves what he called a Holocaust. The more rocket fire intensifies," this is the prime minister talking, he's being quoted, "the more rocket fire intensifies and the rockets reach a longer range, they will bring upon themselves a bigger Shoah, because we will use all our might to defend ourselves." Metin Valnai, Israeli's deputy defense minister, told the army radio there. Now, the word Shoah is the Hebrew word normally reserved to refer to the Jewish Holocaust. It's rarely used in Israel outside of the discussions of Nazi extermination of Jews during the Second World War. And many Israelis are loath to use it to describe other events. The minister's statement came after 2 days of tit-for-tat missile raids between Hamas and militants in the Gaza Strip and the Israeli army. At least 32 Palestinians and one Israeli have been killed since the surge in violence on Wednesday. Now, threads of this nature that focus on Zionists and Israeli and the conflict, Israelis and the conflict in the Gaza Strip, can get ugly fast. And really interesting evolution of the discussion of this thread as you read into it. And it's a fascinating series of comparisons between now and the world just before World War II. And what caught my attention were a couple members focusing on a well-thought-out comparison of how Obama is emerging as a uniquely different savior in America
right.
during a time of slipping national pride and economic turbulence. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as you read on, it's, you know, it slapped, the wow factor just slapped you across the face. It's just incredible.
God, how many times have we all wished that we have our savior? You know, my Lord, if we had a dollar for every time we've done that, you know, I mean, it would be amazing.
Not to interrupt, but I would just be satisfied with somebody I want to give my vote to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're preaching to the choir, Bill. I just see so much hope in America right now and what's going on. I just really hope that they're not disappointed.
Yeah, well, that, geez, that's never happened, huh?
Duh.
Well, we only have a couple more minutes left before we go to break.
I'm going
to
jump into the last thread, which is the latest in the series of fear factor threads dealing with the economy.
Not to be confused with the TV show Fear Factor.
That's right. Well, we've got a lot of fear going on, so who knows where it comes from. Anyway, posted by PaleHorse23, 179 replies, middle class may be subject to food rations, warns the United Nations. This is from blacklistednews.com. The UN is warning of a food shortage crisis and drawing up plans for food rations, which will hit even middle-class suburban populations as inflation and economic uncertainty causes the prices of food staples and commodities to skyrocket. The United Nations World Food Program cautions today that if it doesn't receive more funding, it will have to halt food aid to developing countries like Mexico and China. And other members, Unit 541, goes on to say, I'd say that my grocery expenditures are close to 50% more than what they were 3 years ago where I live. As mentioned above in the above article, I too have started to produce my own produce in an effort to both curb the cost as well as my paranoia. I won't pretend it doesn't freak me out about the public food supply. And Nuclear Paul also jumps in. Food prices are going up here too. Having a mega drought from hell in this area doesn't help as well. And there's just a number of members chiming in, indicating that this is the latest stress factor in the economic troubles, that food prices are going up because of the increase in transportation and a whole number of factors. And now we're hearing of shortages of wheat stocks.
Oh, yeah.
So it certainly is adding to the stress of the time.
And, you know, I don't know if either one of you actually go out and purchase your own groceries, but being a single guy, I do. And I have noticed just in a year's time, the cost of eggs, milk, and bread has gone
Definitely.
Up about 25% to 33% in my region.
I think, you know, it's not going to be the middle class. I think it's going to be the people that are living paycheck to paycheck. Now, I understand there's a lot of middle class people that it affects, but I'm talking about the guys that are below the middle class. Those are the guys that I am really concerned about because I think they're in for a really scary scenario coming up.
Well, listen, when we come back from break, we're going to be having member questions to the CEO of AboveTopSecret.com.
No.
Yeah, are you all ready for that, Bill?
Yeah, we got the cattle prod all set up for you, Bill.
So stay with us. It'll be right after this small break.
This is Agent X. You may know me as a secret informant for Dave and Johnny's ATS Mix Show. What a lot of you may not know is that I chose their show because AboveTopSecret.com is the only website out there that covers all the subjects that I love, whether it's a conspiracy about 9/11 or the secret United Nations meetings with extraterrestrials. I know I'm going to get the need-to-know updated information that I crave. I'd tell you more, but then I'd have to kill you. X out.
Hey folks, the ATS Mix is looking for a few good men and women to volunteer in a number of areas. If you have any experience with writing in radio, television, advertising, or marketing, then we want to read and consider your submissions for the ATS Mix and other projects. If this sounds interesting to you, then please send us your scripts, copy, and original comedy sketches to this email address, dave_and_johnny@mailtoworld.com. That is DAVE for Dave underscore and AND underscore Johnny JOHNNY @mailtoworld.com. MAIL 2 www.worldworld.com. For more information, please go to the website thread entitled Looking for Writers for the ATS Mix.
Dear Osama, I went on the internet tonight and saw the absolute perfect accommodation for you and your comrades. Gourmet meals, daily activities, fun interaction with your peers, a sauna, massage facility, tennis court, and a professional video and photo center. Yes, the attentive staff eagerly awaits you and your boys. Hotel Abu Ghraib. You check in, but you never check out.
We now continue with more of the ATS Mix.
Thanks for staying with us. It is the Skeptic Overview with the Skeptic Overlord, better known as Bill Irvin. And we are in our next process, which is the members interrogating the Skeptic Overlord with member questions.
Those blasted members.
Yeah, it's our version of Abu Ghraib or whatever the heck it is, however you pronounce it. All right, Bill, here we go. House Groove 23. I have been wanting to ask this from one of the three amigos for a while now. What is your thoughts on Project Camelot?
Not many. I really haven't paid any attention to it because Bill Ryan is at the center and still have a bad experience with him through from the Serpo event. So you know what? I really don't know enough about it to comment on it because I simply have not looked at it for that reason.
Which then I guess probably would answer all those other questions that he asked.
Yeah, I just picked one. Yeah. The others were kind of went down in flames with that first response.
All right. A member by the name of Trauma wants to know this, Bill. Have you ever been contacted by the Secret Service, the DOD, the FBI, the CIA, or any other government organization pertaining to this website? If so, has this led to any changes in the forum policy here at ATS?
There have been two cases I know of. One, before I was really involved, Simon had received some material which really was classified, but being a British citizen, he didn't know it. It went up on the site long ago. I think that was like in 99 or 2000 that this happened. And he had a request to take it down, and that was that. I mean, nothing bad came of it. And then another time, I believe it was around 2003, we had somebody playing games and made it look as though he predicted a terrorist attack. And we were contacted by, I believe it was the FBI, and they looked into it and agreed with us that it was a hoax. And oh yes, there was a third time where the phone number of a senior agent at the Defense Intelligence Agency was posted on the website, and we were contacted by them, and they
really
requested to take the number down. Yes.
Wow.
And yeah,
holy,
that was his direct dial. Yeah. Right. And the only thing we've done in response to things like that is to not so much change our policies in regards to what members do, but just make sure that we never ask for anything more than an email address to start your membership, and don't ask for any other personal information beyond that, just so that if some member does mistakenly post something crazy, that the path to actually find who they are is very difficult, and that's really the only reason.
How much is this doggy? Says, in regards to threads like this, and he refers to a thread that's called The Truth My Story by member Just a Person. They want to know, does the Skepmeister think that since there has been so many hoaxes, crying wolf, and I know a guy who told me a story, threads, that when the genuine smoking gun Holy Grail person comes and does post the truth on AboveTopSecret.com, do you think we'll miss it, Bill, because of all the noise and the bickering and all the hoaxes that we've debunked on ATS?
No, and I think we're going to recognize it precisely because of all of the practice our members have debunking the hoaxes and everything. I mean, it's sort of the difficult balance. I mean, in my mind, I would rather suffer 99 hoaxes and let them play their course and discover that they're a hoax, if that means that our wide open policy enables that one incredible truth to be posted and discovered. It can seem frustrating to our members to go through 99 hoaxes, but if it means that somebody ends up posting something that just is earth-shattering and makes a difference, then it's worth it.
This next member's question, I apologize, I normally don't say something like this, but I really don't like this member, but I'm going to go ahead and ask this question.
This member sucks. Yeah. I don't like this guy at all.
A member by the name of Johnny Anonymous wants to know this.
I'd like to know if there has been any progress in the creation of a section for UFO reporting. Last year, there was an announcement alluding that ATS was to create a one-stop anomalous reporting center shop, as per a post by Springer. What's going on in this area?
Well, the floodwaters are rather high in the main office, meaning there's a lot going on.
You're rolling up your pants.
We started that. Yeah, we started that a while back, and the project is ongoing. It's in the hands of our capable administrator, Zedekus Zollzorender, and he's working on the code and the database for that project now. And it is intended to be, yes, a one-stop shop for an open-source database reporting system where accredited UFO researchers can register with us and receive the feeds from us. And the reporting URL will be really easy to remember. And hopefully, as this spreads, the URL will be word of mouth, and that's where people go to report UFOs. No advertising on the site. The whole purpose is to create a single source destination where people can report their sightings and multiple researchers can have access to those reports.
Now, a quick question. Do you have to be a member to submit a report, or could anybody from outside?
Anybody. Anybody can submit.
That's really going to be great. I think we're are we just about done here, Dave?
We are done. In fact, we need to roll because we got a segue into another announcement coming up. So
well, let's remind all our listeners and members alike that if they want to submit a question to the Overlord, they can do so where, Dave?
They go to
No more questions.
No. This is getting a hell of a lot of response. They go to the ATS Mix site, the ATS Mix information specifically, and to the Ask Skeptic Overlord section, and you will note that he's answered a buttload, and he will continue to answer them until we let him go out of his little room.
How much exactly is a buttload?
Yeah,
it's
Dave.
More than you guys can count and fathom, I'll tell you that for sure. All right, well, with that buttload comment, we're going to let a.k.a. Bill Irwin, Irvin, go. And until next time, we'll see you later, Bill. Thanks for joining us on your weekly segment here on the ATS Mix.
Well, you're welcome. It's always a blast.
All right, and stay with us, listeners. We got more to come here on the ATS Mix.
This is Bob. He's a hard-working 30-something male that is well-liked at the office. But Bob is hiding a secret affliction that he's hidden all his life. You see, Bob suffers from what has just been recently diagnosed as politicus uneducatus. Fortunately for Bob and millions of sufferers like him, there is help available for the politically uninformed. And it's available free 24 hours a day to anyone connected to the internet. All Bob has to do is type in www.abovepolitics.com and his disease soon will disappear completely. With Above Politics, Bob can now be informed in what's happening not only with the U.S., but also in the worldwide politics arena. It doesn't matter if it's liberal, conservative, socialized, moderate, or other, Bob can't help but become better educated. He'll soon be up to speed on important issues on topics like the economy, military and security action, energy and science, religious and spiritual influences. And when it comes to finding out the latest on the political players' motivation and sentiments, Bob now will know the difference from the left and the right and everything in between. If you cringe at political discussions around the water cooler like Bob does, grab a pen and paper now and write this web address down. www.abovepolitics.com. It will change your life forever.
The ATS Mod Squad, to serve and protect the AboveTopSecret.com community from idiots, spammers, one-line posters, and trolls. If you want to come to AboveTopSecret.com and make intelligent contributions to our community, no problem. If not, prepare thyself to be Mod Squatted. The ATS Mod Squad, a group of dedicated members with the toughest job in the world, keeping civility on our home. A Three Amigos production.
Have you seen this? A huge earthquake's predicted for tomorrow.
Let's check it out at AboveTopSecret.com.
They have that stuff too?
Oh, sure. AboveTopSecret.com has a lot of clairvoyant and paranormal topics.
Man, it's got everything.
Ah, here we go. Look, the AboveTopSecret.com members determined it's just a hoax.
Really?
Huh.
When events seem too strange to be true, come to AboveTopSecret.com, the place where nothing is too strange and everything is analyzed. AboveTopSecret.com. Deny ignorance. Here's a Dave and Johnny classic blast from your past.
In three, two, three.
Just go now.
This segment will be featuring the burning question, who should be president? And
what underwear should they be wearing at the time that they're sworn in?
And a number of our members posted their responses in audio form. And
oh, it was great response, too. Oh, big response. My God.
Yeah.
What, we have three or 400?
Something like that, you bet.
Are we going to play that special audio of the one that wanted the presidential candidate the little special thing? Are we going to do that, or did you cut that out in the mix?
To be honest with you, Dave, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
ATS, ATS mix, sound off.
Who will you vote for president?
Hello, ATS. This is Biggie Smalls, and I plan on voting for Ron Paul. He's the only candidate with the policy of non-intervention, a proponent of free trade, a believer in a secure border, lower taxes, states' rights. He also believes in small government, an end to drug prohibition. He is a supporter of the gold standard to cut inflation and make U.S. dollars mean something again, and basically for a freer America. He gets my vote any day over some elitist candidate.
Hi, everybody. I'm Semper Fortis, and well, I think that Hillary, or whoever is the most liberal candidate, should be the next president. Just think of all the fun we had with her comedian husband. I mean, he wasn't a real president, but he sure was funny.
Hey there, fellow ATSers, and Dave and Johnny especially. This is Lightseeker, and my vote is for Barack Obama.
This is How Much Is the Doggy? Who would I like to see as the next president of the U.S.? Considering the last guy, anyone would be an improvement. But if you think Hillary and the Democrats are your savior, the world may be in for another bumpy 8 years.
Coming up right after the break, our interview with Stan Deo. Stay with us. Hey, friends, we're at phase four in our ever-evolving podcast show called The ATS Mix. This means now that the show is going to be 2 hours long and presented once a week. It's an extremely exciting phase, and we want to incorporate more of our members here from AboveTopSecret.com to participate. So we've created three segments, and they are What the Members Think.
What the Members Think.
This allows you to call our toll-free number and share a 45-second thought on a current topic or thread that has garnered your interest. Ask Dave and Johnny.
Ask Dave and Johnny.
Which allows you to call our toll-free number and ask Dave and Johnny a question about a current news event, issue, or a conspiracy topic. Sound off.
Sound off.
A tried and true segment, which again allows you to call our toll-free number and sound off on a chosen topic that we've posted in the ATS Mix Arena. It's a very wonderful avenue for you to now become a direct participant in one of our ATS Mix shows. So let me tell you what our toll-free number is. 1-877-417-2204. That toll-free number again is 1-877-417-2204. And you can get more information about these three new features, What the Members Think, Ask Dave and Johnny, and Sound Off by simply typing it in the ATS Google search area.
People of Earth, attention. My name is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm Johnny Anonymous.
And we are from a faraway galaxy called AboveTopSecret.com.
We have just landed here on our spaceship, ATS Mix.
And we want to find out if there really is intelligent life on your planet.
So if you enjoy aliens, UFOs, and conspiracy theories with cutting-edge humor,
come to AboveTopSecret.com for an out-of-this-world experience.
AboveTopSecret.com. A-T-S Mix. Featured interview.
All our members and listeners alike have been chomping at the bits because of the gentleman we're going to be interviewing today. Are you excited?
I'm very excited because this is one of my brothers, one of my Air Force brothers.
And that is indeed correct, sir. So let's tell everybody who we're going to be interviewing today. He's a very interesting gentleman by the name of Stan Deo. Stan has a very diverse background, so you might want to get a pencil and paper out and take some notes.
He is a senior systems analyst, a computer programmer of mainframes in seven languages. He's a self-educated research physicist, an advanced propulsion engineer for marine, air, and spacecraft, an author of several books and scientific papers, an amateur archaeologist in the Middle East, a TV documentary television host for several TV shows on Tesla, and also a series of highly rated shows in Perth, Australia that included UFOs Are Here and UFOs Are Back. Stan has held an above top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He has lectured on such topics and subjects as UFO deception, the suppression of energy technologies, and the coming destruction of America by civil war followed by a foreign invasion. His website is located at www.standeo.com. That's STANDEYO.com. And we implore you to please visit his website, perhaps while you're listening to this interview. It's with great anticipation that we now have with us Stan Deo. Hi, Stan. How are you?
Hi, guys. It's good to talk to you. I'm fine here, sitting in a nice warm house in the middle of all this cold and snow droppings here in Colorado.
Yes.
Oh, you're up in Colorado, yeah. I guess you guys, well, I have my accountant lives up there, so I know you guys are really getting a buttload of snow.
Yes, in the northern part, they're getting a lot more than we are. We're just getting little dribs and drabs at the moment. But, hey, we're at 5,280 feet here at the house, a mile-high house, so, you know.
Wow.
I love that. And I used to be stationed at Lowry since, you know, we're Air Force buddies. I was stationed at Lowry for a short period of time in Denver, and it was like I was there in 1967.
Well, I did some of my T-33 jet training out of there at the academy in 63, I think it was. Yeah, 63.
Okay. Well, yeah, well, you were there before me. What time of year were you there? Do you remember?
Let's see. Gosh, it would have been summertime, I think, going into fall.
Yeah.
Maybe you could tell our listeners what it was exactly that you did for the FBI.
Well, now, let's see, that would have been back in 70, 71. They approached me in Dallas at my place of employment. I needed to have someone to monitor, communications between the company I worked for and other countries, the heads of state over in the Middle East. There was arms and like aircraft trafficking going on, you know, purchase and sale thereof. And they wanted to know more about it and the operations of something that the director, Mr. Hoover, was personally interested in. It's called, the file was called the Illuminati file, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I asked them why they, you know, came to me to work for them as a, you know, kind of, I guess, an informant, and they said, well, we've checked on your, you know, your record and your family's record, and we know that you're patriots and that you've had security clearances before, and, you know, we'd like for you to do it, and we'll pay you, you know, equivalent to what you're making here at this company on the side. And I said, well, if I do it, I'll do it because I'm interested as a patriot. I said, certainly, I wouldn't be averse to getting some information back from you on certain projects, including the Illuminati, but also on propulsion. And that was where we left it. I never got paid cash, so, you know, there's no record of that. But
yeah, I love the cash transactions.
Oh, it was one where I accidentally stumbled onto something one day. Actually, it was during Nixon's administration. And Murray Schottner arrived by helicopter in our parking lot there in Dallas in the afternoon with a couple other guys, and I was instructed to find out the names of these people and get it to my agent, which I did at great risk because I had to break into some place to get it because they weren't telling anybody in the company who these people were. And when I did, I called over to talk to my agent at the Dallas branch, and he wasn't there. So, you know, you call the FBI. I said to the secretary, look, this is hot information that the guy, you know, my agent really wanted to know, and here it is. Tell him that I'm leaving with you because I'm not sure, you know, if I've gotten in trouble because I had to break into a place, and here's the information. So then I went on home that evening and after dark, and I was, you know, with the family watching TV out in the suburbs of Dallas, and there was this knock at the front door. Actually, it was the doorbell rang, and I went out there and opened the front door, and there was nobody there. And I thought, well, now that's strange. And after today's activities, you know, I thought maybe I better duck. And then I hear this voice from out in the bushes out to the left of the door saying, call my name, and said, it's me. And he gave his agent name. He said, get out here in the dark and turn off the light. So I did, and I went around to the side of the house there in the bushes talking to my contact agent. He was really mad at me. He said, why did you say that stuff on the, you know, to our telephone operators there at the agency, at the FBI? I said, well, I thought it might not get there otherwise, in case I got caught and you know, held up someplace. I said, you said it was important. He said, yeah, it is. He said, but one of the names that you mentioned was the Washington area director of the FBI. He had not even told us that he was here yet, and he's in part of something that, well, he said, look, the FBI is having an internal war, those who support Hoover and those who don't. And we're, you know, he's on the other side. And he said, when you put that there, it kind of exposed us all. You know, I said, well, you should have told me, you know. I mean, gee. Anyway, after all that, my work kind of tapered off real quick because they figured out how to.
Yeah, it was nature's way of telling you maybe it's time to slow down on your job, right?
Oh, well, it got worse in the next couple months. A hidden camera caught me doing what I was doing over there, and I was summarily dismissed and given, you know, 30 seconds to clear the building, and then various agencies helped me in joining that other project down in Australia, and they blew me out of America, and for 30 years I was gone.
Well, you know, you were talking about security clearance, and, you know, I had a top secret security clearance being in headquarters squadron for the Air Force. But, I mean, for a security clearance on your level of authority, I mean, what's involved in that? I mean, do they, you know, firstborn kid or what?
I don't know how they do it. I had top secret too before, you know, when I was in the Air Force, but when they picked it up, they used their own resources. I didn't have to fill out a form for that. And like when I was in Australia, to give you an example, there was a place called the Aeronautical Research Labs, and there was a head scientist there that reviewed all papers on propulsion or whatever came in. And when I went down there, submitted my paper as I was instructed by Teller's people to do.
Right.
This particular guy got my paper, and it was taken away from him a few hours later, and he was told that he had, you know, almost the top security clearance you can have in Australia, that he was not cleared to read my paper and to not try to access it any further, and that was the end of it. Well, that very day, I was living in a place called Carnegie, a suburb of Melbourne. That's just where we first landed. And anyway, I'd walked down about one block that evening to what's called a milk bar, which is like a mini 7-Eleven run by a mom and dad type operation, very common in those days. And I was standing in line to pay for, I don't know, whatever it was, some marshmallows and, you know, chocolate for the family. And this voice behind my left ear says, don't turn around. And I said, what? And he says, I will see you outside. Do not turn around. And I said, well, who are you? And, you know, while I'm waiting there talking to someone behind me, I can't even see. And he says, submitted a paper that was viewed today at the Aeronautical Research Lab, and I reviewed it. Is that enough? And I said, yeah. So I paid for my marshmallows and chocolate or cocoa stuff and walked out the door. Didn't see anybody behind me. I don't know where the heck he went, but I took about 5 steps, and then the boy starts walking behind me and says, don't turn around, it's me. He introduced himself, and his name, he was Dr. Warren, and he said, this is me. And he says, you're not going to believe this, but I live right across the street from you, right at the top of this hill. And I said, okay, so why is that important? He said, well, they took your paper away from me today, and I got to see enough of it that I'm curious, you know, what goes on, how these craft work, and, you know, I'm not allowed to see it again. And so I can't ask for a copy or any information if you get my drift. Well, I said, I suppose I could flip across in the night and put something in your mailbox. He said, well, I can't ask you to do that, but... So I didn't. We became friends after that. But, and by the way, he's the guy that invented the black box for aircraft, you know, crashes.
Really?
Is that right?
Yeah, he's a remarkable man himself. But so I don't know what my level ended up being in Australian security. In the project, it was totally different anyway, because we were outside, you know, government institutions and things like that. It was transnational We had the Germans involved and Norwegians and Brits and, let's see, Russians. Oh, yeah, Russians, yeah. Australians. But it was a, as I say, it was an organization that was above, it was supranational. So they did their own checking on you. And they were slow in finding out one little fact that eventually led to a little bit of a, in fact, a lot of a disagreement between us. And that was that my father was Jewish, and they didn't particularly think that was a brilliant idea. So, but before they found that out, I mean, it took months for them to get down to that point, but before they found that out, I mean, I had lunch in what's called the Melbourne Club. My contactor, my controller, who was Sir John Williams, he's now deceased too, but these old cotton top guys with cigars and ports, you know, glasses of port, ran the country, and I was sitting there in the halls of power without realizing, you know, how much power was sitting around me. But people danced at their beckon, you know, a wave of a hand, and things appeared and disappeared on your table and wherever we were in the port room by the fireplace or whatever. But, yeah, I got to see and hear quite a bit down there.
Well, you mentioned Edward Teller. Why don't you tell a lot of our listeners who Edward Teller is and why he's important to the story?
Well, Ed Teller is, has been nicknamed or dubbed the father of the hydrogen bomb project. And Teller is he's Hungarian by birth. He's a tall man, quite impressive in person. He was a forward thinker, one of these people like Hermann Kahn that sit down and plan the future and are looking to and try to figure out ways to change things in human industry and culture now to avoid certain things that are that appear to be coming in the future because of our actions, like food shortages or energy shortages. And we were talking about this stuff with him and people like him, gosh, 35 years ago. So he was important in that he led a group of scientists, including Dr. Sakharov, Andrei Sakharov, the Nobel Prize winner over in Russia, into forming this project, which was not simply to develop some flying saucer or anti-gravity. It was much more than that. And Teller was basically the kingpin of it because America had the power and the technology, the industry, that we could draw from to have things made for our bases, which were underground or under ice caps, in various hard places to find all over the planet. So Teller, being as he was, you know, super mind and physicist, could pretty much railroad things through when he needed to in the civilian world, was appointed, I guess, the de facto organizer of this thing on a planetary scale. What amazes me is that he was able to get away with this without the public knowing about it, without the military complex kind of jumping up and down about it. In his last days, he's probably the last 10, 15 years of his life, he had a military minder whenever he went out in public, you know, usually high-ranking officers, colonel or general staff in the Army were with him, to keep him, I guess, protected and also to be sure, I guess, that he didn't chat with people he shouldn't. He had a huge responsibility in his part on the technological side of the project, which was set up to bring about a world government that would work. And this started, decades before, I think probably even before the Roswell incident. They had technology they were developing in the back room, and I found patents, two of them in my patent search here out of 4,000 I looked through, which I'm pretty sure were the original donut or saucer craft that started, you know, are there behind the scenes development technology. And as it progressed toward the 40s, and of course there was the complication of World War II, as it progressed, the technology spread out from just not just aircraft, but into other things. And Teller and eventually Gordon Gray, who became the Secretary of the Army, and a number of other fellows' names that you would probably recognize if you're into the UFO MJ-12 type research, got together And with the technology that they had, and this was before Roswell, it was decided that they ought to try to solve planet Earth in a peaceful manner. And they'd realized that with trying to form a United Nations or a League of Nations in those days, before the United Nations, that negotiating 196 cultures and nations and religious factions into a one-world government where they agree to do something was going to be impossible. I mean, just look at the Arab or the Islamic Jewish problem in the Middle East. That's just one of all the kinds of combinations that they would have to solve.
Right.
And that one just doesn't seem to have a solution at all. Anyway, they looked at that and said, okay, well, by peaceful negotiation, we can't solve the planet and get people to agree to try this one-world government. So, okay, if we try like Hitler and we use our technology, we've got in the back room and go out and force the planet, you know, take over the governments, we'll run the same problem that Hitler did in France. You know, the resistance will form, and it will be unstable for a long time because we can't control people that much. It'll slip through our fingers. Okay, well, then what do? And they hearken back to the days of one of them's childhood when he and his brothers would fight or, you know, bicker at night in the bedroom before they went to sleep. They would eventually solve the problem between themselves because Dad would come up, hit on the door and say, the next word I hear, you're going to die. Of course, somebody would say the next word. And Dad would then open the door, kaboom, just like a Bill Cosby tape, and, you know, I'm going to kill you. Now, they believed it, you see. And the brothers would say, well, Dad's going to kill us. We better get along. And they would get along and go to sleep, and that would be the end of the problem for that day. So on a global basis, they decided, look, maybe this will work. Let's create the Dad image, you know, with the 8-foot-long belt with meat cleavers on it, and let's scare the heck out of the entire planet and long enough to set up a world government. And so they said, well, with our technology, we can invent aliens, you know. I mean, this was talked about, you know, years before the Roswell thing. It was, a radio program, the invaders from Mars, this kind of stuff was on the lips of people back in Tesla's time.
Right.
So they thought about it. And they said, well, you know, let's just run a separate, secret, out-of-the-nations-control technology. We can use American and European and whatever industry we need. We'll have them make certain parts for us and deliver it to an assembly area without knowing what it goes to. And that way we can take advantage of our industrial infrastructure and eventually even create our own industrial infrastructure underground and elsewhere that they could never detect. So that was the original plan. However, in about 43 and 47 with Roswell, a couple of other things happened where real quote-unquote aliens came on the scene, and real technology way ahead of what we had appeared. This presented a problem. They were faced with a bigger Dad with a bigger belt than they were going to create to bring the world to its knees. The best laid plans of mice and men. But anyway, after 45, they couldn't come out to the public and say, look, guys, we were going to fool you, but we're not now because we've got a real alien here. And, oh, you know, I know you're tired from World War II and, you know, 60 million people have died and you just want to get back to life, but we've got to fight an enemy that is so far advanced on us that we're fleas compared to them, but we need your help. What do you think? It wouldn't wear well. The people would probably just lay down and give up, you know.
Right.
They were just too tired after World War II. I mean, it was a devastating thing on the morale of all the countries involved and the whole world for that matter. Anyway, you know, you can see in the movies, the genre of that time in the early 50s, how the aliens from space, the Martian beast, all this kind of stuff that came in, people were really frightened of these things and suspected they were there. And, of course, they were right. So this is part of the reason the group formed, the MJ-12 and affiliates formed, was to solve this problem, to keep the aliens at bay, to make a deal with them and try to form a resistance technological development to them without the aliens knowing it. And sadly, this didn't work because the aliens all along, all they were trying to do is develop infrastructure, have us develop infrastructure for them to use later. And in the late 70s, they took over what Dr. Teller's group and others had put together and kicked us out of our bases, and or most of them anyway, and some battles have continued right up until, in the last 6 years. But there were a number of us that had knowledge of the technology to various levels that escaped out into the world. We were actually helped out by our supervisors. And all of our records were burned or destroyed or given back to us, I mean, complete files, and we were just disappeared from the project because the elder guys knew that we were going to lose eventually. Sir John told me that at lunch one day at the Melbourne Club.
We'll be back with more ATS Mix right after this brief message.
Hi, everybody. Dave Rabbit here with the ATS Mix Show from AboveTopSecret.com. When I get ready to relax after doing a long show, I enjoy going to our sister site, BelowTopSecret.com. They have some great forums there, some of which include rants, jokes, puns, and pranks, which is one of my favorites, faith and spirituality, relationships, travel and vacations. They even have a freshman forum for you newbies and rookies. I especially enjoy the music, television, fantasy, and science fiction forums, as well as comics, music, member art, and, of course, video games. But my absolute all-time favorite is cool websites. And I want to tell you why. As everyone knows, I do not read. On cool websites, the membership at BelowTopSecret.com has done the work for me. They've researched the World Wide Web and found very interesting sites. All I got to do, go into the forum, click, and I am at an interesting and very cool website. So when you get through listening to that last ATS Mix show, come join me at BelowTopSecret.com, part of the Above Network LLC. Remember, deny boredom, BelowTopSecret.com.
Coming up on Al Jazeera, aspiring terrorists try their best to show they've got what it takes to blow themselves up and become the next Islamic idol. But they have trouble in front of Judge Simon Towell.
Okay, what's your name and what are you going to do?
My name is Akmar Mohammed and I'm going to blow myself up.
Off you go then.
Allah Akbar!
Oh, come on.
No, wait. Allah Akbar!
This is pathetic.
But it should work. I got the plans off the internet.
No, you're done. Thank you. Next.
Hello. My name is Abdullah Mohammed, and I'm going to...
Yes. Get on with it.
Allah Akbar!
You call that an explosion?
I'm sorry.
A bloody firecracker.
It was all I could find.
A country full of Al-Qaeda and you can't even come up with some C4.
I know I can do it. I know I have what it takes.
No, I don't think so. Get out. God, who else have we got?
Hello, my name is Mohammed Al-Mohammed Mohammed.
Right, off you go.
Allah Akbar!
Now that's more like it.
That's next time on Islamic Idol, only on Al Jazeera TV.
We now continue with more of the ATS Mix.
Well, before you get out of this area, you've touched on something that really is my hot button, Stan, and that's science fiction movies of our generation. And, of course, two come to mind. One, of course, is The Day the Earth Stood Still with Michael Caine. I have heard about from so many people, Shirley MacLaine was one and several others, that said that the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still was a test, a collaboration, if you will, between the United States government and Hollywood to see what people's reaction would be if they did in fact have an encounter with an alien. Do you know with your FBI background stuff, did you ever hear any of that stuff?
Well, I don't know whether that movie was. It certainly, I mean, viewing it like that, I could see where it could be. You know, how well they believed, or, you know, I suppose they could have interviewed the audiences after that to see what their reactions were to the movie. But what did occur, rather than an alien thing, was before the Bay of Pigs invasion, there had been a plan put forth, you may have heard of it, by the CIA, to have pamphlets dropped in Cuba, which were saying there are going to be soldiers coming to help you, and to show that they are the good guys, a vision of the Virgin Mary will show up in the clouds. And they were going to go just around the curvature of the Earth with naval ships and project an image of, you know, Mary up into the clouds so that the Cuban populace could see it, and they would help our troops, you know, to overthrow the regime.
Hmm.
Now, that, in essence, that was a shallow form of let's get Big Brother alien to come and scare the world into a one-world government. So they were already thinking openly at that time, well, what is now open anyway, about pulling a stunt like that. So Michael Rennie, as you know, worked in intelligence in the war.
Yes, I knew that.
So, I mean, I found that movie to absolutely be classic. It was just classic what we were about, you know.
Yeah, it really was.
Well, even more recently, you remember the Cocoon thing, the first one when the guy's on his boat, and he says, are you going to eat my face off or something?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, number two is absolutely my all-time favorite science fiction movie from that era, our era, and that is Forbidden Planet.
Absolutely.
Not only was that movie technologically ahead of its time in special effects and everything else, I mean, the flying saucer, it just gave me so much imagination about what could be. Tell me about your fascination with that particular movie and what it really is trying to tell us.
I got a private copy of the movie. Like, I had, I bought one to show to people at lectures and things. I would say, look, I want to show you your future here. There are things in here that are absolutely correct technologically.
Right.
And when I look at the movie, I think there's just a number of scenes in there that resonate with me. For instance, when they were going hyperlight, when they were at normal space velocity and they were going to jump to the velocity of light, they all got into little cubicles or little tubes, and the warning gong sounded. And as they started to transcend the speed of light, you see a Doppler shift in the color spectrum, you know, quite what you would expect, I assume, at that rate. Then when they see this, they land on this planet with all the technology that the Krell had and how they had destroyed themselves by invading their own privacy, by, you know, in essence, giving the id the power to manifest things. It was telling us, you know, when you have this much power without governance, you know, you're going to destroy yourself. And whether it's in the id or whether it's in your conscious mind with super technology, you'll reach a point where you can destroy yourself as this great civilization did. That movie alone tells you that the thought process is going through the mind of those writers and producers of that were way ahead of their time.
Right.
I'm sure they must have been advised by people in you know, Gordon Gray's group and stuff to try to put their case to the public, at least in the United States, in a manner that was fiction, but those that could see would understand. One of the other lines that I like, and it's when the engineer, after the monster, the id, has attacked the ship overnight and destroyed the Klystron transmitter. Here's, you see that engineer standing out there with the Klystron tube and all this stuff and bent in array, and the captain says, well, how long is it going to take to fix that? We need to tell Earth. And he says, well, he don't stop for breakfast.
Yeah.
But that era was extraordinary, and I guess we had to live it, to tell people about it that weren't there. There's just so many movies that came very close to it. And the saucer thing did go faster than the speed of light. And as I've said on one of the answers I gave here on on your website to some of the questions that your members asked, the speed of light is not the limit velocity. It is the limit velocity or the velocity of electromagnetic waves in space.
Right.
Which, as we've recently come to suddenly discover or rediscover, space is not empty. It is filled with dark matter, dark energy, whatever, or as they called it 120 years ago, ether space. It's like anything else. If you push through anything, whether it be ether space, you know, dark matter, dark energy, or push through water or air, if you shove your way through, you are going to reach a finite limit. In our case, in the air, the first limit barrier was the sound barrier.
Right.
And the faster the aircraft went, it piled up a bunch of air in front of it, you know, it curled back, the inertia curled back, until it started meeting its own energy in reflected energy in the air ahead of it. And that's what they pass through, and they pass through that barrier wall. It's an inertial wall. And once they get through it, that's just the first wall. And there will be another one later on down the way when they get to a much faster speed because they're shoving their way through the environment. The saucer craft in the Forbidden Planet that went faster than the speed of light did not have the obvious external ornaments or parts that we know of anyway that would allow you to go faster than the speed of light. But it did do it in a manner that was in keeping with what we think you would see on board or nearby the craft as it transcends the speed of light. But anyway, be encouraged. We can go to, in the future, theoretically, we can go to many other star systems at speeds like you hear talked about in Star Trek, because, in essence, you are warping space ahead of you by creating what's called an entrainment field. You breaststroke your craft at high speed through an environment by curling the pressure wave behind you. And it's not like you blink out of here and blink in, you know, having done a wormhole. You're actually traveling the distance, but you generate a field that goes ahead of the craft, bends around, and takes the shock wave behind you, and you're always riding ahead of your own wave like a surfer. So this is now possible, and certainly I'm going to be explaining that with some of the craft we will make available to the public here through our new company in the next year or two.
You know, as I was going around your site, which, by the way, friends, it's at www.standeo.com.
Deo!
Yeah, thank you, Dave. That's STANDEYO.com. You do have this new website that is Halo Orbital Technologies, LLC. You're supposedly going to be releasing something new and revolutionary. Is there anything you can share about this with our listeners?
Just tell him no. Hurt his feelings. Tell him no.
Well, look, there are a variety of simply legal issues that I have to address there. I cannot explain to you right now the negotiations that are going on behind the scene, but my objective there has been and still is to make products available to the public, particularly in the United States first, which will teach them about the new physics, or the old physics that has been kind of withheld from the public, to show you how saucer craft work, how they evolved, at least on our planet. And I've written a three-part paper, I guess I've written two-thirds of the three-part paper, the first part of which I submitted to the IEEE for publication here last year. And we came to an agreement not to agree because they wanted to control my copyright, so I couldn't even show it to other people on my website. The objective of what I'm doing is to be able to show people, you know, to teach them about the new technologies, about gravity and how the universe works and how gravity works, that you can see it without a 10-dimensional, you know, general relativistic equation or matrix algebra to do it. I show you in picture form, in animation form, and eventually I'm going to show you in real things that fly how it works so that you understand it. Because I know that if we can do this in a responsible manner in the community, we will take all of our bright young engineers and turn them loose with new vistas, new horizons of technology. They will absolutely astound us with what they develop from it. But they've got to know what the lie of physics has been holding them back. And certainly, entrainment propulsion is the beginning of this understanding, and that's what I'm trying to do with this company. I mean, even as we speak, I have my engineers and fabricators making a remote-controlled model flying saucer, which uses aerodynamics and off-the-shelf components for the prime mover so that people can buy them, build them, paint them, you know, fly them, and learn and touch the technology firsthand. The electrogravitic one or anti-gravity one, the release of that information, I'm not too sure that I'm prepared to give that circuit to the public yet in the current international environment of terrorism, because with this, even our side playing with it as amateurs without understanding a lot more about it could blow up half a city by accident.
Wow.
So in good responsibility, I can't see releasing the details of that, like an atom bomb, for instance, but I can discuss, which I have done in The Cosmic Conspiracy a long time ago, the general concept, and more recently in Roswell in 2005 at the Ancient of Days conference there, I did show a couple of pictures, one of current testing we're doing with an electrogravitic platform, and a computer-generated animation of what the inside of anti-gravity saucers, the main driving coils, look like, without explaining the details of the circuit, which, of course, is the heart of it. But I've done that much, and certainly we've gotten a lot of feedback from all over the world, for that matter, from YouTube copies of it. we had a fifth grade class, one fifth grader in Florida, their teacher contacted us, and this little fifth grader got a hold of that tape. I guess his dad showed him or something, and he understood. And so I had a dialogue with his teacher and with him and with the class, and we've turned a whole fifth grade class into a bunch of entrainment propulsion physicists in fifth grade. You know, they're having a ball making these things for water and eventually for aircraft, I guess. But
right.
I am encouraged to see that happen in a responsible manner. So what else can I tell you?
Right. Well, how about this? Besides the legalities of it, and I can understand that, how about affordability? Will that be something that, once this is released, that we could see the average John and Jane Doe be able to accept and be able to purchase?
Yes, as a remote control model up to 4 feet in diameter, yes. The reason, well, there's a lot of reasons legally that I'm not going to go for a public right. release of the man-sized craft, but
sure.
for the model craft, we anticipate being able to hit the $400 to $800 market, and that is affordable. We're even looking at making some smaller ones that are under $100 that don't fly, but sit on a desk and can be taken apart, and it comes up with a booklet that says, here's how it works. That's not as much fun, of course, as the one you fly, but if you look at helicopters on the market, you know, model helicopters.
Sure.
The good ones are, you know, $300 to $1,200 a kit. And, you know, we're going to stay within that because we're using off-the-shelf components. And what we're going to have to do, I hope you guys understand this, we're not going to release it dribs and drabs. We're going to release it all of a sudden, and we will tell people ahead of time when the launch date will be. And first come, first serve, we'll get to buy actual models or kits. This is our plan now. And the reason is this. In the modern world, China do not honor American patent or any other
right.
patent treaty.
Right.
They can have, if I sold one of our models out or even put it on the Internet, a picture of it, 2 weeks later, the Chinese, we've already timed, the Chinese would have a better working, cheaper model landed and ready to sell on our West Coast within 2 weeks. Now, you can't start a business, fund it, and hope to get your capital back with them doing that.
Sure.
So what it forces you to do is to raise enough capital in the beginning to build all of them that you want to sell to break even and make your initial profit for your investors, and then make the big announcement and say, okay, here's 4,000 units. The first 4,000 people, you give one. After that, well, we'll see. We might build to order, you know, and take orders. But because we know that after that, the copycats from China will absolutely kill us.
Sure.
So it forces us into either just sitting on secrets or having our own big corporation, or I say big, several million dollars worth of inventory that we do this with, and we keep the secrets ourselves, and we don't file patents because the Chinese have 1 to 2 people sitting at all times in Washington in the patent office, and as soon as a patent becomes unsealed and open to the public, they glom onto it, shoot it back across to home, and if you haven't built your product, they'll do it anyway because they got access to your patent legally. These are decisions the average person doesn't realize that we're having to fight. I mean, right now about 75% of my time is taken up reading legal documents, looking at patent options, whether or not to do this or that, scanning through the patent libraries. But it just takes a mountain of work and time to get this all organized and protected in such a manner that we can get it to the people intact and to as many people as want it in the United States.
And you're a partner in this, is that correct?
Yes, I'm the CEO of that, and
okay.
I will be the CEO of another company that will be involved here shortly as well.
Okay, and I think that's the reason why I was going to allude to this next question. Do you foresee in the future your company or companies, since I know that you're also very interested in some of Tesla's projects, are you planning on either investigating, or perhaps you already have, starting to do some R&D on alternative energy?
Already been doing that. That was privately. But there again, there are certain legal ramifications. If we make a product and
right.
sell it, we become liable in this litigious society of ours. We become liable for somebody to get a scratch or get shocked or electrocuted from one of our devices, even though they might have mismanaged it. So it forces us into taking a path that will get the technology to the people, but in a manner that we're not liable for what they do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I can't elaborate much more at
sure.
that moment, but let me say this. The areas I've been investigating, and we'll continue to investigate in R&D, are thermionic converters, upper atmospheric converters, and deep well telluric current converters. We're not going after 0 point. I'm leaving that to the guys that are playing with that. These other areas I'm talking about are from known physics, known data, and no magic, you know, 0 points or anything that are hard to pin down. The telluric earth currents system interfaces to subterranean currents of electricity, huge currents of electricity that flow all the time. At certain times of the day, they flow at different rates and different latitudes, but these things actually drive the movements of thunderclouds and storms. They are linked to them directly. And the telluric currents themselves are linked then again to the solar wind that impinges on our magnetopause. And so there are ways that we've developed derived from Dr. Morey's circuit, which will allow us to interface one or both of those or relate them together. And then the grand prize is going to be in the thermionics, where, we use what's called a triboluminescent material, same term that Dr. Morey used. And a triboluminescent material is like a phosphor in your TV screen, like the zinc oxide.
Right.
If you hit it with an electron, it will emit light.
Right.
You know, the photoelectric effect. But conversely, if you hit it with a certain frequency of light, it will emit charge out the other side.
Oh, I did not know that.
No. Now, using a triboluminescent material like this, it is possible to tune the wavelength or wavelengths that you want to convert to electricity. Now, what is probably not thought about by the general public is that all atoms around us exchange energy. That's how they hold shape and mass in the infrared spectrum. In a band of the infrared, atoms are always exchanging energy by either spin or translation or bumping into each other, or by electromagnetic radiation, photons that are going between atoms. Dying atoms throw off photons, which are absorbed by neighboring atoms of the same frequency, and it sustains those atoms for longer until they die and then share with somebody else. Now, if you can take a material and make a triboluminescent material that responds to that infrared frequency between atoms, most atoms of anything we know, it will then be able to take the heat photons or phonons that hit that that material, and out the other side of the material, linked to a tuned circuit, it can extract the energy as electrons from the other side of that material.
Oh, wow.
Which means you can cool stuff, and you could grab your hand around one of the collectors for such a device. It could make your hand cold and turn that into electricity to heat a cup of coffee for you.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
Okay, now, this would be challenged by the traditional physics, saying you're looking for Maxwell's demon. And Maxwell's demon was a little invisible character they invented to describe the process. If you have a box full of atoms of air, and there's a divider in the middle of the box, there's a little demon there with a door, and every time he sees a fast-moving air molecule on his side, he opens the door and skips it over into the slow side, into the other side of the box. And as long as the little demon can selectively choose fast-moving atoms, he can throw them over there until you've got a collection of high-energy atoms over in the other side of the box, and that gives you an energy differential, which you can then convert to electricity by letting it flow back through the door or whatever. But the thing is that the demon has to use energy to open the door. Not the same amount of the bullet shooting through it,
sure,
but he still has to use energy. Okay, now, go from this experiment into sitting on a lake. Let's call it a crater lake with the jaggy crack, you know, precipice and points all around it. You're on this lake in a yacht that's wind-driven. Now, you have in your possession on the boat a pair of glasses that let you see infrared buildups in the air around you. Now, you look for oncoming wind coming over the mountains, over the side, down through a pass somewhere, and you can see it because it makes the air warm ahead of it as it's pushing at this high speed. So you know the air is coming from that direction over there. So you see it's going to come that way. You adjust your sail to catch it and put that energy into moving your boat in a straight line. Mm-hmm. Now you look for the next thrust of air. It might be coming from another place. Oh, here it comes. You're becoming Maxwell's demon. Now you're only using the energy to change the position of the sail to catch horrific amounts of energy as that wind comes shooting across. So what you're doing is making order out of chaos. You're taking random air movements, in this case, and converting them into the motion of your craft. You're taking air movements, catching them in a sail, and moving a mass through water. You could just as well take the air movements and convert them to electricity and drive a prop to let your thing go through the water. This is the overall concept that people need to understand to be developing this kind of technology. It's taking random motions, whether it be in a nuclear fission reaction or whatever, and converting them into coherent, parallel forms of energy that you can use that are not polluting. And from this, going down this path, I mean, it's going to take more than me sitting here in the lab doing it, because it's going to take a lot of people doing stuff. But, you know, it's frustrating. I know that there are a lot of people I've talked to out there, they've emailed or phoned or whatever, who have their technologies and things they're working on, and the frustration is they can't get funding. You know, they can't get the time off to do it, and no one will listen to them. So part of what I'm doing here right now is trying to set up a corporate structure. In fact, I just got off the phone with one of with a public corporation that wants to help us do that, to set up some kind of an institute that will help people like that, and we'll bring them in, and we'll just get the technology going one way or the other.
Oh, that would be great.
What it need. Well, look, there are a lot of guys out there with some great ideas, but no one will develop it, and they're faced with the same problem we are. Someone will steal it, or they'll shut them down.
We'll be back with more ATS Mix right after this brief message.
Man, the news is confusing.
How so?
Well, this story here, no end to terrorism.
They're just scaring you.
You're not worried about this stuff?
Yeah, but that's why I go to AboveTopSecret.com.
AboveTopSecret.com? That conspiracy site you showed me once?
Yeah, but it's so much more than that.
When the news lets you down, there's only one place to go. AboveTopSecret.com, the alternative to mainstream news for people who think. AboveTopSecret.com, deny ignorance.
Feeling better?
Yeah, thanks.
First came the ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. Then came the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. And just when you thought the airways were safe, comes the launch of the newest edition to the Above Network LLC family, the BTS Mix Show, coming soon, exclusively on BelowTopSecret.com. Deny boredom.
We now continue with more of the ATS Mix.
Let me ask you a question, Stan. I just went to the site, and boy, you have been a busy little bee, haven't you? You have gone in there and just intermingled with the membership. I mean, I got to give you applause for that. Yay.
Because, well, why is that?
Well, because I just went in there because we had a series of member questions. And I just went in there just to see, you know, if anybody had posted anything while you were talking to Johnny on this last one. And my Lord, you've answered just about every single person's question that's posted on the site.
Well, yeah, I suppose. I looked at your site before we went to do this recording, and I was a little bit early, you know, for when we do it. So I thought, well, I'll just look at the site and got to reading the questions. And I thought, well, I can answer that one, and I can answer that one. So, yeah.
Well, you've done a marvelous job. I tell you, you have made those members' day, because it's very, very rare that a guest of ours takes the time to interact with the membership. When it comes at the end of the year, when they pick guest of the year, you're going to get all the votes and the trophy.
Well, I don't mind helping. I used to teach at university for a while down in Australia, and I loved it. My students blossomed in front of me, and I love to share as much as I can within reason. You know, responsible.
Yeah, sure.
Reason.
Yeah. These people are going to, they just absolutely love you. I've gone through and did a quick scan again, and I mean, you already have a pretty huge devout group that's on the AboveTopSecret.com.
I know that other than the propulsions and the alternative energies that you're interested in, you have another talent has gained you quite a bit of notoriety, and that is you're being able to do predictions on seismic activity. And I thought perhaps I would give you a chance to tell everybody a little bit about how that came about and what you use to come up with that data.
Okay, well, that occurred, I found out how to do that in 1995. The U.S. Navy in Monterey, California started publishing on the Internet at that time a sea surface temperature anomaly map. And basically what that meant was they had an average for every day for so many years ahead of time, or 30 days I think was their first one. But they started gathering data, and they said, well, look, the sea surface temperature over the whole planet, these spots are hotter, and these spots are colder, and these spots are neutral compared to the average. And it's called an anomaly map. And so you get bright blues, which was cooler than normal, or bright reds, which was warmer than normal.
Okay.
And the range of the anomaly was something like plus or minus 6 degrees centigrade. Not a great drama, but anyway, it was still of interest to people that were using the maps, including myself. So I started collecting these maps and thinking, you know, as a graphic artist type mind, I thought, gee, these are pretty. I wonder what the difference, the rate of change is. If I subtract one day's map from the next day's map, what's the difference? I mean, how long does this spot say stay too cold? And
right.
It was called this rate of change. And when I did that, I thought, well, that's interesting. And I did 2 or 3 days of that and filed them on the computer and thought, well, yeah, fine. And then there were some earthquakes that occurred. And I happened to notice that one of the earthquakes of significance had occurred around the Pacific Rim in an area where I had had some activity appear, or like a significant change in the temperature anomaly. I thought, I wonder if that was something that precedes an earthquake. So I started developing over the next couple of years and refined the process using the naval data every day that came out twice a day then. And it allowed me to detect subtle differences in the rate of change over fault lines that were about to release energy in an earthquake within, 6 hours to 5 days from the time that I got the data. And I don't know what the Navy was doing with how they got their data, except, well, I talked to them about it. In fact, Holly and I went out and visited the facility there at Monterey where they do it. And they take data from buoys and from submarines and satellite and all that kind of stuff and compile them together.
Right.
But somewhere in the process, they include something which, you know, you wouldn't see normally, I'm sure. But it gave me access to this thermal data. And when a earthquake was about to happen, the crack or the fracture in the formation would start a direct current exchange going one way or the other through both sides of that fault, from one side to the other and up into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And the current flowing would take heat from one side and put it to the other side, so one side of the fault line would cool and the other would heat. It would make a red and blue winged butterfly spot over that area. And that's how I would know, by the size of that spot, you know, what the intensity of the quake might be and about how long it would be before it would release. And it was accurate enough over the years. I mean, I had like a 70% hit ratio, which is, you know, phenomenal.
That's phenomenal.
Well, and that it would have been higher except for the era that which the Navy told me about that they had in their gathering themselves from cloud occlusion and from buoys that failed, and then the average is taken from further buoys to make up for the gap in the database. So they said, well, we have an error, you know, in our data collection, and it's affecting yours. But without that, of course, if we didn't have that, your stuff would be even higher than 70%.
Wow.
It was so good that we were able to, or I was able to forecast that Richter 9 in Sumatra area there
right.
about 5 days ahead of time. And
wow.
went on radio and said, look, there's something big about to happen down here. You know,
sure.
Something really bad.
Sure.
But after that and the publicity we got, the Navy decided suddenly to change their software, change their different satellites, and these maps and those and that resolutions are no longer available to me or the public.
Oh, no.
Even the Mexican Naval Admiralty rang me on a conference call before they shut down my access. Said, look, whatever you need, you know, we'll give you because your stuff is good enough for us to use it to forecast tsunamis off the shore of Mexico on the Pacific side. So, I mean, it worked, and a lot of island nations were more concerned with the data as well because they are almost to sea level anyway, and any
right.
major quakes in your area would drown them. But sadly, in November of 2006, I believe it was, they cut off our data stream, and we could no longer do it. Couldn't find a replacement for it.
Well, that's terrible.
I'm sure you've heard of the guy by the name of Bob Lazar.
Yeah.
He's made claims. I mean, it's a matter of record. Being a conspiracy website at AboveTopSecret.com, I would be remiss if I didn't get your take on this. Can you tell me, is there any truth to what he states?
That's a difficult question. because some of what he does say is correct in my opinion. First of all, the 115 propulsion system, if you look at what 115 does, according to Lazar, is it is bombarded with particles that produce electricity out of the 115 to drive the gravity wave generator. Excuse me, those three pods that come out under what he called the sport craft. Now, as far as him working with Teller, before I was, or as I was being taken into the project, I was told by Dr. Maxfield, who was a partner of Teller's as well, that they had had over 50 similar type projects, similar to my own, that they had sponsored and developed since the mid-50s up until that time in the late 60s, early 70s. Now, what Lazar may have been involved in might have been one of those other projects. There are a number of ways to produce power, a number of ways to produce anti-gravity. The craft that Lazar was talking about, if he indeed was seeing, was shown that, was one they were trying to back-engineer or had back-engineered. The 115 thing is a thermionic thing, like I was talking about, to generate power.
Right.
It takes heat and converts it straight to electricity. It's a thermoelectric type device, but it can just produce prodigious amounts of electricity by bombarding the nuclei of these of 115, so that it releases electrons in a coherent, controlled fashion instead of in fission or fusion. Fission and fusion are terrible ways to produce energy out of the spin of atoms because it's chaos and it just goes in all directions and just, you know, explodes. But what Lazar was addressing as Area 51 or Groom Lake or whatever, there's been a lot of smoke about that. I mean, you hear it on coast to coast frequently. A number of people testifying they've been there or seen it or tracked individuals that were involved there. I was never there. And what Bob says as far as them wiping out his records, I don't know that you can do that. I mean, he went to high school, and there are a number of high school annuals, you know, produced every year for a graduating class. And surely they haven't gone around to every member of his graduating class.
And grabbed the yearbook, right?
Yeah, grabbed his yearbook and cut his picture out. You know, it just didn't happen. So
I've got some ex-girlfriends that would like to grab some of mine.
your photos.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the thing is, I think that his mind was probably played with a bit, and it might have just been LSD they gave him or something like that. I don't know. But I think they messed with him a bit, knowing that he was going to be a leak, a loose cannon, in essence.
Right.
He didn't get far enough into the project, as far as I determined, to – he never spoke on certain things that I thought he would have. And the TV reporter from Las Vegas?
Kevin Randall?
No, the other one that is on Coast to Coast. He was on the weekend.
George Knapp.
Yeah, George. All right, well, George Knapp, even the other night, said, look, you know, I know Bob, he said, and he got me started in this, and he did me a number of favors. But even he addressed the thing as saying there were some things that were a little off
sure.
with Bob's story, and he thinks that was due to the conditioning. So right. I'll go there and say that as well. But a number of things technologically that he spoke of were pretty close.
All right. There has been recently a whole lot of talk about the possibility of a false flag alien invasion. Do you think that there is that in the works?
I do. And whether it is real aliens or technology we have produced, there are a couple of things that I anticipate. In fact, I'm seeing them happen now in the Texas spate of sightings in the last couple of weeks. I have absolutely jumped up and down and said, yes, I knew this is what they were going to do. They've got to, whether it's our guys doing it or whether it's the aliens, and I think it's probably the real aliens doing it, they have got to impress the people, physicists and engineers alike, that they got the big belt, that they're so far ahead of us that we can't touch them. And to do this, let me back up. Engineers reject the fact that you can have a craft, even 30 feet in diameter, hover in the air for 10 minutes in one spot, because they think in terms of rocket propulsion,
right.
chemical fuels, and you couldn't carry enough fuel on board for your mass ratio to sit there and hover for 10 minutes. It's impossible, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now, when I have been challenged with this, the first thing I say is, okay, excuse me then. So if I can take my craft and hover for 10 minutes in one spot, then I've defied the laws of physics. Well, I don't know of any way you could do that. I said, well, what about a hot air balloon? Oh, well, that's different. That's specific gravity. That doesn't count. Okay, fine. All right, so if I now have a 30-foot diameter craft that has its own gravitational field, will you give me that much in the discussion? They say, yeah, okay. I say, now, if it has its own gravitational field, that field's going to be pulling in some direction, let's say toward the center of the craft. Or, doesn't matter, but let's say toward the center of the craft. And it's 30 feet in diameter, so it means that your support structures, your arms and winches and whatever else you got in there, these will be no longer than 15 feet in length, and therefore they could withstand inertial changes without bending or deforming too much at all. Well, that's correct. Okay, fine. Now, if I have a fleet of three of these 30-foot diameter craft,
right,
and they can link together with their fields, so that they have three fields, but they're linked together where their fields overlap and they're locked together with the field in between them. Now, will you agree that I could then fly them like a flock of birds that, you know, one leaves the others and they just fly around? Yes, that's possible. Okay, now remember, we've got three of them and three local gravitic fields. Each craft has its own gravity field. So therefore, if I were to stretch a bar of steel from one of the craft over to the other one, which is now going over 60 to 90 feet, the gravity that would be controlling it, the inertia, if you change directions, that would be controlling it, is only going to have to be over a maximum of about 45 feet to the midpoint. And so we can build stuff that can withstand inertial charges like that, or inertial changes like that, that are hundreds of feet long. I said, so theoretically then we could hang a skin over those three craft that are linked together, and we could just hang a light skin that is colored metallic or whatever we wanted, put a sound box inside that made sounds like whoom, 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 whoom.
Right.
And we could say we've got a craft now three times the size of a 30-foot diameter. Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, okay. All right, that overcomes the inertia problem with the mass not deforming. Yeah, okay. All right, now then, let me take 100 of these and put them together and stretch a canopy over all that like a big dirigible. They've all got local gravitic fields. Now, if they're all being controlled together in unison, we have a craft that's a half a mile to a mile in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, in the Texas sighting that just occurred, that guy standing in the trees looking up said, as I looked up, this huge thing, several hundred, you know, yards long, came over.
Right.
And I noticed little holes or dimples in the bottom of it, equally spaced. Those are the gravitic fields, the nodes that allow the thing to be that big and travel. Now, if you have these things, you can put them underwater, you can put them in a lot of places, they won't be detected. And when the time comes, you float them over major cities, and even the engineers will fall down and say, impossible, they are the man, you know, wow. And they'll be impressed. And I think we are being set up for a massive interface with a technology that is apparently too far beyond us, so far beyond us that we just have to treat them like gods in the old days.
Sure.
And this will be the thing that will unify the planet under a global government. This time, I'm afraid, however, it will not be good guys. Even as the Bible says, there's a deception coming first.
Right.
So clever that it would fool everybody if it were possible.
Right.
And I think in our age of all the stuff we know now about technology and how to do things, that would impress us to the point that people would just fall down a dead faint and say, you got it, man. What do you want? That's the next thing on the cards I see.
Huh. And you feel that we're going to probably see this more prevalently then?
I believe so. I think we're going to see a lot more sightings, a lot more contacts, but there will be still the mystery at a distance. And I think that whoever's controlling the technology, our guys or, you know, ones from the parallel universe or whatever, that whoever's controlling it will stay aloof from the public and not let the familiarity destroy the myth like in Wizard of Oz,
right,
like the professor behind the curtain.
Sure.
And if the curtain is moved, then you don't believe in the power anymore. And I think that this is what we're going to see, and a government of humans under the control or advice or supervision of these beings will be set up eventually. But I think what will have to happen first is this. Massive famines, which are starting now.
Right.
Massive collapse of the world economies, which is starting now. Wars, rumors of wars, major nuclear wars, and we already have the things starting in the Middle East, and the Iranian conflict is the next one, and they're threatening to wipe out Israel. And if they make their move, or if Israel makes a preemptive strike, World War III is on the horizon. And then pandemics killing people, you know, like millions and hundreds of millions of people. These things, they're going to be so bad, and that plus earthquakes and global warming problems are going to make the people of Earth so ready for someone to solve the problems that when these beings come in with these super craft, super technologies, and yo, look, we can solve your problem. You got to change the way you live, though, and follow our model, and
right,
we're going to tell you how to do it. They will leap at it.
Sure.
Without question, they will leap at it. And this you know, from my Hebrew studies and stuff, I believe that this is the great deception of the first wave coming, that they're going to mislead a lot of people, and eventually they will be overthrown, these bad guys, by the good guys. You know, putting it in simple terms, that's where we're headed. We're headed for terrible times to be resolved by apparent saviors from, you know, this advanced technology, and we'll be walking to the wolves' den.
Wow. You know, Stan, we could easily talk to you for about another 10 to, I don't know, maybe 1,000 hours more. But
I think that's being conservative, John.
Yes.
Oh, is that with or without margaritas?
No.
Dave's got a mobile little unit he brings.
I do. It's called the Rabinator. And you just jerk it along. The downside to it is, Stan, it takes a long extension cord to keep that sucker going.
I'll work on that.
Yeah. Well, hey, but I just got one last visual, because, you know, I'm a visual guy. I don't read, John. I'll tell you. Everybody tells you I don't read. Movies I love, but I don't. I'm a visual person. I bring your attention to, for people to have a visual, Independence Day. And if you remember, on Independence Day, it was a mothership. So it doesn't, it's not too much of a stretch of imagination to believe that what they saw in Stephenville and everywhere else, that's what they saw. And I mean, you can sit there at the Air Force and come in and say, well, we had sortie missions. We had 15 planes flying sortie missions. I mean, is it too much of a stretch to believe that that's kind of what's going to happen?
No. I mean, look, you and I both know that flying saucers, UFOs about the size of a plane, or B-1 bomber, or this or that, are kind of, you know, old hat now. I mean, they've been around for six decades or so.
Right.
And we've worn them to death. And people say, oh, well, yeah, but that's probably a secret Air Force craft. But one that is that size, you know, half a mile? No way, Jose. We haven't got anything that would touch that. It's just technologically impossible. And so, yeah, I see the visual. It's look, imagine that thing coming over and casting a shadow over your whole darn suburb or town,
right,
you know.
Right.
And, you know, the sun stops and you think, well, that's pretty big. That probably isn't from around here. You know, we should have fun with that, boy.
Yeah, see, the reason why Dave is so concerned is because he's living in Dallas right now.
Oh, poor Dave.
And not only living in Dallas, I was born, bred, raised up here, and other than the tours of NAM, have always been here all my life. So, yeah, since you were in Dallas, I mean, you know, we could have actually passed each other somewhere.
It's true, we could have. I don't know why they're over Stevensville, but I don't think it has anything to do with the Crawford Ranch. We could probably chat again as news develops, but I think we're going to have a very, to quote the Chinese, very interesting times ahead.
Oh, certainly. We want to remind everybody that Stan's website is located at www.standeo.com. That's STANDEYO.com. And we encourage you, please, to go there. And we want to thank you, Stan. Stan, we hope you'll come back and see us real soon.
Sounds like a plan. Let's do it.
Well, we're almost at the end of our show, and we intentionally waited till the end of the show before we had this next segment. Dave, do you have any idea as to why we do that?
Yeah, because we don't want to have the whole show killed just because of one rant.
That's right, and that's this is a little segment we call Dave's Rant, where we toss it over to you, Dave, and you get to talk about a particular subject or a topic or anything that's got your old rabbit fur standing on end. What's got you riled up today?
Well, this week I want to rant about something I found at AboveTopSecret.com and was posted by the member by the name of Conspiracy Theorist. It was posted in the Breaking Alternative News section, and it's entitled Uncle Beheads Toddler in Supermarket. Did you read this, John?
I sure did, and if you don't mind, for our listeners that may not know what we're talking about, it was posted March the 3rd. And this is what it briefly says, that a man beheaded his 15-month-year-old nephew in front of his mother in a supermarket in Saudi Arabia after the family was having a dispute between the man's sister and the brother-in-law. The man killed the little boy in front of the mother in the shopping mall. He chopped off the boy's head. She fainted, had to go to the hospital. The weird thing about this, Dave, is that murder is punishable by beheading itself, so which is just a very strange coincidence.
I don't even know where to begin. I was so upset by this. I can't even fathom it, doing that to a 15-month-old child. I was so angry, John, so upset I would have, if I could have, gone over there and personally shot that stupid bastard between the eyes myself. It broke my heart. It really did.
Yeah.
It really did.
We want to remind everybody that we have another great show coming up for you next week. We hope that you'll help participate in some of our sound offs and what the members think. We have a toll-free number for you to be able to participate, and we look forward to being able to hear your recorded messages. On behalf of the ATS Mix, I am Johnny Anonymous.
And I'm Dave Rabbit.
We'll see you next time.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.